This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McBee. Cyber teams inside the government and private companies have been trying to block attempts to take over hospital computer systems across the United States. AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
The FBI and two federal agencies say Russian-speaking hackers are trying to insert a ransomware into computer systems in healthcare facilities across the country. The attacks come as the nation is seeing big jumps in positive tests for the coronavirus and COVID-19 hospitalizations. One expert calls this the most significant cybersecurity threat to the U.S., and he is concerned the group may try to lock up the computer systems of hundreds of hospitals over the next few weeks. Tim McGuire, Washington.
With less than a week until Election Day, former Vice President Joe Biden spent Wednesday focusing on fighting the coronavirus while U.S. President Donald Trump stayed on the campaign trail. AP correspondent Ed Donahue.
Biden stayed in Delaware and was briefed by health experts on the virus.
I'm not running on the false promise of being able to end this pandemic by flipping a switch.
Biden says even if he wins, ending the pandemic will take hard work.
We'll let science drive our decisions. We will deal honestly with the American people, and we'll never, ever, ever quit.
In Arizona, President Trump touted a vaccine.
A safe vaccine is coming very quickly. You're going to have it momentarily. That eradicates the virus, and we're rounding the turn regardless.
Few wore masks in the crowd. Practically every state is seeing a rise in coronavirus cases. I'm Ed Donahue.
The CEOs of Twitter, Facebook, and Google faced some tough questions at a Senate hearing Wednesday for alleged anti-conservative bias in the company's social media platforms. Twitter's Jack Dorsey, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, and Google's Sundar Pichai testified to the Senate Science, Commerce, and Transportation Committee virtually over their restrictions on certain content on their platforms. This is VOA News. A former Homeland Security official has revealed himself to be the critic who wrote a scathing op-ed against President Donald Trump 2 years ago in a book under the pen name Anonymous. AP Jackie Quinn, correspondent, reports.
Former DHS Chief of Staff Miles Taylor is anonymous no more. In a tweet, he says he authored the controversial New York Times column and a book entitled A Warning. He had written about President Trump's, quote, misguided impulses, and said there was a secret resistance force that worked to undermine parts of Trump's agenda to preserve what he called democratic institutions. That led the president to denounce a deep state working against him. Taylor tweets that Trump is a man without character, while White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany has called Taylor a liar and a coward. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Eight people have been charged with conspiring to work on China's behalf and a plot involving threatening letters and the use of night vision goggles to surveil and coerce a Chinese family to return to their home country to face charges. Assistant Attorney General John Demers says that the eight were charged with trying to coerce a New Jersey man to return to China and face the charges.
The five defendants the FBI arrested this morning on these charges of illegally doing the bidding of the Chinese government now face the prospect of prison. For those charged in China and others engaged in this type of conduct, our message is clear. Stay out. Your behavior is not welcome here.
The alleged plot was known as Operation Fox Hunt and Operation Skynet, and court records show it took place between 2016 and 2019. Its goal was to target Chinese nationals living in foreign countries and to intimidate them into returning to China to face charges. France and Germany both announced new measures Wednesday to combat rising cases of the coronavirus, with French President Emmanuel Macron announcing a new nationwide lockdown beginning this week. In a speech to the nation, Macron said the new measures, which start Friday and last until at least December 1st, will mean people will have to stay in their homes except to buy essential goods, seek medical attention, or to exercise for 1 hour daily. Restaurants, cafes, and shops not selling essential goods will have to close for at least the next 2 weeks. Earlier, German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced new restrictions to fight a resurgence of infections. Effective November 2nd, gatherings will be limited to 10 people from a maximum of 2 households. Restaurants, bars, theaters, cinemas, pools, and gyms will be shut down and concerts will be canceled altogether. The move comes as both nations battle an increase in the number of coronavirus infections. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 29, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The main opposition candidate says Wednesday's Tanzania election was a complete fraud.
The evidence emerging from the whole country is one of organized fraud, planned and executed by the police, by the intelligence service, under the cover and the blessings of the Electoral Commission.
Algeria's president is hospitalized after reportedly contracting COVID-19. Civil society and opposition in Angola are planning more anti-government protests. A Somali human rights activist received the prestigious German Africa Award. And rights groups in Zimbabwe criticize a planned amendment to the country's Criminal Law Act.
The amendments will criminalize the conduct of isolated citizens or groups who, for self-gain, cooperate or connive with hostile foreign governments to inflict suffering on Zimbabwean citizens and to cause damage to national interests.
Botswana is to allow charter flights to boost its tourism sector. And this morning, a view from Tanzania on the U.S. election. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Are being counted in Wednesday's Tanzania presidential and parliamentary elections. Preliminary reports said voting was generally peaceful in many parts of the country. National Elections Commission Chairperson Judge Themistocles Kajeke Wednesday denied opposition claims of pre-marked ballots at some polling stations, saying the information had not been verified. However, Tundu Lissu, candidate of the main opposition Chadema Party, says the election was a complete fraud, organized by the security forces and intelligence agencies under the cover of the Electoral Commission. Lissu said there were widespread irregularities and police violence in many areas.
This is not an election. This is a complete fraud. In many places, we have at least over a third of constituencies countrywide where our polling agents were not allowed into the polling stations, or they were kicked out of the polling stations after they had entered. Almost everywhere in the country, our polling agents, those who survived the purges, have not been given the results forms. There are many polling stations where results have not been counted. The polling supervisors just declared CCM candidates winners without even giving the numbers. We have many areas where cast ballots were found. There are many areas where police used violence. They used tear gas. They used live ammunition. Several people have been killed in some of these areas and others injured. So briefly, this is not an election. It is a complete charade. It's a complete fraud.
There were reports of some pre-marked ballots or so-called fake ballots or fake votings at some polling stations. But the Elections Commission chairperson has denied these reports.
I have with me here ballots which were already marked, which were seized in one particular polling station in Dar es Salaam. We have video footage of ballots which were seized and burnt by angry voters in another part of Dar es Salaam. And therefore, the Electoral Commission has been very much part of this fraud. And therefore, they can say anything. But the evidence emerging from the whole country is one of organized fraud, planned and executed by the police, by government agencies, by the intelligence service, under the cover and the blessings of the Electoral Commission.
What can you tell us, Mr. Lissu, about some candidates, particularly local or parliamentary candidates, being arrested, I think, prior to the vote or maybe on the morning of the voting? I mean, what can you tell us?
Many candidates were arrested prior to voting. Others were arrested during voting. And therefore, it is all this proves that this is not an election. This is just badly organized exercise in ensuring that this autocracy is given a veneer of legitimacy, which it doesn't have.
When do you expect the final results to be tabulated and announced? And would you accept the results, whether or not you are victorious?
Well, the commission has said that it intends to declare the results on the 30th. And that is another example of how fraudulent this exercise is. It is obviously clear that this is a fraud, and I will not accept the fraud. I will not recognize the results. I'm not making a concession. We will ask our people to intervene and defend their democratic rights to have their voices properly heard. So we do not accept whatever the commission will decide at all levels.
Mr. Lisu, we are always happy to speak with you, and thank you very much.
Thank you so much, sir.
Tundu Lisu is the presidential candidate of Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dodoma. Rights groups in Zimbabwe say the government is targeting critics with a planned amendment to the country's Criminal Law Act. The new law would, among other things, make it illegal for Zimbabweans to have unauthorized communications with foreign governments or to make unsubstantiated claims of torture or abduction. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, analysts say authorities appear to be going after charities and the political opposition.
The proposed law would make it a crime for citizens to have unauthorized contact with foreign governments or protest during international events or visits. Information Minister Monica Mchangwa said late Tuesday the change was needed for national security purposes.
Such communication or negotiation has a direct or indirect implication on Zimbabwe's foreign relations and policy. The amendments will criminalize the conduct of isolated citizens or groups who, for self-gain, cooperate or connive with hostile foreign governments to inflict suffering on Zimbabwean citizens and to cause damage to national interests.
Speaking after a cabinet meeting, she said they would also make it illegal for anyone to make unsubstantiated claims of torture or abduction. Independent political commentator Rejoice Ngwenya says the proposed law against foreign contact is aimed at charities. He notes President Emmerson Mnangagwa last week vowed to crack down on aid groups that were criticizing his government's human rights record.
It seems again like his predecessor to be obsessed with controlling non-governmental organizations. Now, this is typical of authoritarian regimes. Where they fail to provide services, they look for scapegoats. So I suggest that the president focus on delivery, on government delivery, rather than molesting and intimidating non-governmental organizations.
The proposed law against claims of torture or abduction appears to be aimed at silencing Zimbabwe's opposition. The main opposition, Movement for Democratic Change, MDC party, has accused Mnangagwa's government of abducting and beating opposition members. In May, three of the MDC's female party members, including a lawmaker, alleged they were abducted by state agents, beaten and sexually assaulted. The women were rearrested in June and charged with lying about being abducted. The information minister said such claims were concocted to tarnish the government's image. While the proposed amendments still have to go to parliament for debate and voting before the president signs it into law, the ruling ZANU-PF party has a majority in both chambers. So any amendments the government proposes is almost guaranteed to become law. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Civil society groups and opposition parties in Angola are planning yet another protest on November 11th to press home their demands for an end to corruption, unemployment, and the postponement of local elections that were supposed to take place this year. Rights groups have criticized the government over the treatment of protesters and the arrest of journalists covering the protests. Mario Pavai is the veteran independent Angolan journalist.
We are aware that until now, hundreds of protesters are still detained, and there's no, until now, any official statement on the process. Several lawyers from the civil society, I would say around 40, are defending the protesters in the court, but until now, There's no any public statement of what kind of accusations made against them.
Reporters Without Borders said on Wednesday that it was concerned about the Angolan police arresting of journalists covering the protest. What can you tell us about journalists being arrested?
Journalists are already released. I would say six journalists from Radio Essential and Weekly Valor Economic are already out of the prison. But the large majority of the protesters, activists, common citizens are still jailed. I would say around 100. Another group of protesters in a northern province of Uige were also released today under bail of 200,000 kwanzas, which here it's a lot of money. Is almost 10 times the minimum wage. So civil society activists are calling for a new big demonstrations next 11th of November in Angola.
Mario, what are the issues driving the protests?
The protests, as they demand last 24th of October, last Saturday, are against unemployment, against the high cost of life in Angola, and demanding local elections, which everybody are aware, were postponed by the government without any date until now. These are the most important demands of the protesters.
President João Lourenço has made the fight against corruption the mainstay of his administration. I hear the protesters are also concerned or are complaining about the level of corruption in the administration. How come?
So protesters and the civil society and the opposition are criticizing the government, saying the fight against corruption is the idea that is political orientated to former President Dos Santos' family and their allies, and that there is no real result of this fight. The protesters are also demanding more transparency on this fight because until now there are not a true panoramic of the assets confiscated by the government to some politicians involved in corruption.
That was Mario Pavai, a veteran independent Angolan journalist. He was speaking with us from the capital, Luanda. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 29. Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune is in a military hospital after reportedly contracting COVID-19. The president's hospitalization came days before a scheduled November 1st constitutional referendum that could give the country's top leader more power. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
President Abdelmadjid Tebboune was hospitalized Tuesday after reportedly contracting COVID-19 several days ago. Algerian TV indicated in a terse statement the president's health was not a cause for worry. Tebboune's illness comes at an awkward moment for the country as Algerians prepare to vote in a constitutional referendum Sunday that reportedly would give more power to the president, while at the same time limiting his tenure to 2 5-year terms. Prime Minister Abdelaziz Girard, who announced the president's hospitalization for specialized treatment, has been campaigning across the country in recent days to urge Algerians to approve the November 1st constitutional referendum. He says the 2020 constitution, which is about to be voted on, is not a break from the current era of President Tebboune, but rather is a break from corruption and those who are corrupt. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA that the president's illness is cause for worry, but says he doesn't think the country will fall apart because of it. Diab says given President Tebboune's age, 74, there is always some sort of risk with this kind of illness, but he says Algeria's governmental institutions have shown themselves to be fairly solid and that the referendum will go ahead as planned on Sunday. Several French and Algerian media outlets suggest there are underlying tensions between President Tebboune and the country's military over the referendum. The Algerian military is a major power broker in the country and played a key role in the transition of power in 2019 between Tebboune and former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
A prominent peace and human rights activist in Somalia, Ilwa Elmar, has won the prestigious German Africa Award for her humanitarian work in Somalia. Ms. Elmar's Peace and Human Rights Center works on the rehabilitation of child soldiers, victims of gender-based violence, and women's issues. From Berlin, where she received the award from German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas, Elmar tells reporter Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service what the award means to her work.
For the work I'm doing with the Elmar Peace Center, it's a great honor to be able to showcase a new side of Somalia to not only the rest of Africa, but to Germany and the rest of the EU. And it's a badge and honor I wear proudly. And what it means to me, beyond just a beautiful ceremony and an award, is an opportunity to meet with the Minister of Foreign Affairs, with different parliamentarians, with different ambassadors, and to make the case for increased cooperation with Somalia, and that horizontal partnerships and significant investments are continued to be made in Somalia.
Taking you back to Somalia, what does it mean to the young people that you work with, that you represent, women and children? What does it mean to them?
For too long, and definitely even now, the image or the reputation that most people have of Somali youth are ones that have only ever known conflict. We're often described as pirates, terrorists, or lawless societies, and that kind of negative image or narrative that supersedes most Somali young people, whether they're in the diaspora or from the local community, is one that hopefully will be chipped away at and abolished soon when we see more young people, more young women particularly, at the forefronts of major processes, at the forefronts of peace and security, and more positive identities being associated with youth in Somalia. And I think that's one of my biggest honors as well, too, to be able to show the world that there's so much more than just what little box that we've been put in, and it's time for us to reclaim our narrative, and awards like this that put Somali youth at the center stage support that process.
For those who might not be familiar with your work, tell us about your work and why it's important in Somalia.
My work with the Elmar Peace Center is focused on creating peaceful coexistence and investing in innovative new solutions that provide services to the most vulnerable members of society, whether it's through education, whether it's through job creation, whether it's through the clinical management of rape and health facilities that we've set up for survivors of sexual and gender-based violence. Our approach and our theory of change is threefold. One, providing services and interventions that actually help people rebuild and reclaim their lives after tragedy. The second is on social norms work, education, awareness raising, and creating a more enabling and progressive environment for all Somalis. And the third is on legislation and policy work and partnering with government to prevent these issues from continuously happening. And the fourth unofficial pillar of my work is to rebrand Somalia, to show the potential, to show that we need investments, not charity, and that there are opportunities for engaging with people in the field like myself.
Ilwa Elmar is a prominent Somali peace and human rights activist. She was speaking from Berlin, Germany, with reporter Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service. Botswana says it will allow charter flights to the country's prime tourist destinations starting November 1st in an attempt to boost its sector that has lost hundreds of millions of dollars since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Kundise Dube reports from Habaruni.
Botswana's government says that beginning Sunday, it will open tourist destinations to chartered flights, bringing in international travelers. Flights will be allowed to land at two airports in Maun and Gasani, two prime tourist resorts in the vicinity of the vast Okavango Delta. Botswana's Minister of Environment, Natural Resources, Conservation and Tourism, Filda Giring, said in a statement that the government is finalizing rules to facilitate the arrival of tourists. These will include protocols to contain the spread of COVID-19, she said. Tour operators around the world's largest delta are optimistic following this week's announcement. Reaboga Mbulawa, who runs safari lodges in Maung, said the move will help resuscitate a dying sector.
It's better as the major companies start to kick in. We will be waiting and preparing. But as it is now, we went to town, we saw a whole lot of their stuff being taken into the delta. I mean, it shows you that the other sector, the other side of the industry has already mobilized.
However, Mbulawa believes the opening will only benefit the bigger players in the tourism industry.
You know, it's a good development, but looking at it, you'd still find that only the major tourism companies would be the ones that would be able to charter in their clients through their agents. But as for the rest of Botswana, the locals, the ordinary citizens, they will be waiting to see a time when the normal kind of flights will be open. I mean, it's a new development for the country, but it's not as glamorous as we think.
Most of the workers in the tourism industry were laid off as the pandemic led to a global downturn in travel. Rose Branch, a pilot with air charter company Mac Air, has largely been idle since the pandemic began. Mac Air provides scenic flights over the Okavango Delta.
As a pilot, this is the best news for us because COVID has hit our tourism industry so hard and the flying has come to a halt. So to hear the news that the border will be opening to international tourists with charter planes is amazing. It's a right step in the right direction for our economy and it'll open up a lot of jobs again.
Tourism contributes around 13% of the diamond-rich country's GDP. However, the industry has lost about $220 million in cancelled bookings since travel restrictions were imposed in March. With flights beginning Sunday, officials hope to recover some of that revenue. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Final voting in the U.S. election is next Tuesday, November the 3rd. We have been speaking to people around the world about whether they think the election matters to them and to their countries. Today we get a view from Tanzania.
In case of USA presidential election, it matters to me and it matters to our country as well. First of all, when we talk about this friendship we have between our country and USA, as far they have their embassy in here, and we have our embassy and our ambassador is well representing Tanzania in USA. This kind of friendship can be the way of how do we accommodate each other in terms of interest and values we have in our friendship. So we need to understand who is coming to power as a president, and do we think what his interest can help our country or cannot help our country. In that case, we have every point to make sure that the presidential election of USA matters to us so we can think and at least give us a chance to understand if we can keep on being friendly or making this friendship kind of helping each other or giving aids to, especially to us, we as a developing country. Another thing from that point is regarding to democracy element, election is one of the points that we should consider, including free election and people should vote and choose the leader they need.
The view from Tanzania on the 2020 U.S. election. We'll have more comments from around the world about the U.S. vote tomorrow. And that's it for this Thursday, October 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty wishing you a beautiful day.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.